Cody hesitated as she approached Sanctuary on Ursulines. Not because the famed bar and grill housed a menagerie of lethal shapeshifters and was owned by a family of bears, but because Nick's mom worked there. In the past, Charisse had always been friendly to her, but she had no idea what Nick had told his mother or how Charisse would greet her today. Still, this had to be done, and she was not a coward. Summoning her courage, she headed for the doors that were guarded by a massive blonde werebear named Dev. He had his long, curly blonde hair pulled back into a ponytail, and he smiled at her approach.
Afternoon, Miss Cody. How you doing?
Pretty good, you?
Flashing her a dazzling smile, he brushed his hand over the double bow and arrow tattoo on his biceps.
I can't complain, but I always do.
Cody laughed. One thing about Dev, aside from the fact that he was extremely gorgeous, he had a wicked sense of humor.
Is Charisse working?
She is, but her evil spawn isn't with her.
If Dev only knew how close to the truth those words were.
I know, I was hoping to catch her here without him.
Then you're in luck. She's on kitchen duty today. If Remy gives you any lip for being back there, let me know and I'll reorient his attitude for you.
Remy and Dev made up half of a set of identical quadruplets, and while the four of them might look alike, Dev, Remy, Sharif, and Quinn had very different personalities. Remy was the grump of the bunch, Quinn the bashful one, Sharif Mr. Serious, and Dev the eternal charmer.
Thanks, Dev.
Many times, sweetie.
Cody walked inside and scanned the tables that were clustered around the entrance. A smile curved her lips at the coffin in the far left corner that had a sign draped over it. Written in what appeared to be blood were the words, Amy's last boyfriend. Amy Peltier was the only daughter of the Bear family, and she was a knockout with a body Cody would have to pay a surgeon to get. As such, Amy's 11 brothers and giant father tended to be a little overprotective of her. Cody winced as that thought reminded her of her own family. Her brothers had made her every bit as crazy with their incessant interference and overprotective lunacy. Back in the day, they'd line up to inspect any guy she was interested in. Then they'd threaten him with horrific images of what they'd do if her would-be guy even so much as made her frown. And they were angels, compared to her father, who couldn't stand anything male other than him, his brother, and her brothers coming near her. Gods, how she missed them all. What she wouldn't give to have them make her crazy one more time.
Trying not to think about it, she headed for the bar and back. The door to the kitchen was beside it. She nodded at Sharif, who was drying glasses and putting them away, as she pushed the kitchen door open. This time of day, it wasn't too busy. Charisse was standing at one of the steel tables, pressing out handmade biscuits. Cody didn't see Remy, and she was more than grateful for it. The only person in the back with Charisse was the other cook, Jose, who was busy chopping vegetables. Jose smiled at her.
Hola, Cody.
Hi, Jose.
Charisse paused as she caught sight of her. A veil came down over her face, hiding her emotions and thoughts.
What are you doing here?
They could use that tone to ice down sodas. Cody reached into her pocket and pulled out the box that held the necklace Nick had given her. Closing the distance between them, she set it on a clean area of stainless steel table next to Charisse.
I wanted Nick to have that back. I'm hoping he can get a refund for it.
Charisse scowled.
That's very decent of you, Nakota. Thank you.
There aren't many girls who would be so considerate, especially not with something that cost as much as that did. Cody reluctantly let go of the box, not because the necklace was valuable, she couldn't care less about that, but because it signified the broken trust with Nick. And that she hated with every part of her.
My parents raised me better. You don't use people and you don't take from them.
She saw the sympathetic pain in Charisse's eyes. And the respect.
I'm sorry things didn't work out between you two.
Me too.
But it is what it is.
She turned to leave.
Cody?
She looked back at Charisse with an arched brow.
Nick is very hot-tempered.
like me. It's that spicy Cajun blood that flows thick in our veins. Give him a few days, and he won't change his mind, Mrs. Gaucher. You and I both know he's too stubborn for that. Once he makes his mind up. Another thing, he comes by honestly. I'd so hoped he wouldn't inherit some of my less than desirable traits. Cody smiled. Obstinance has its place. And there's nothing wrong with being passionate about things. Passionate, his mom said wistfully. I like that.
She went back to rolling out her biscuits.
You take care, honey. If you need anything, I'm still here for you, Nick or no Nick.
Those words touched her deeply, and they made her ache for her own mother. Charisse Gaucher had the biggest heart that Cody had ever seen. She was an easy woman to love.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
As Cody reached the swinging door that led back into the public area, she looked back at Charisse. She had flour smeared across one cheek, and her blonde hair was pulled up into a bun. Even so, she was incredibly beautiful. In the back of her mind, Cody saw Charisse's alternate life. Had his mother put Nick up for adoption, as her parents had wanted, she would have gone on to Tulane University and would have been married to a lawyer now, living the life of a rich socialite. Instead of an only son, she would have had three daughters who looked just like her. Charisse would have never known the degradations and poverty she'd faced with an infant and no place to call home. But to Charisse, Nick was so worth every bit of it and then some. You could see it in her eyes every time she looked at her son. She loved him completely. And there were no regrets inside her heart at all.
And if I kill him, it will destroy her.
Charisse wouldn't be able to function without her son, not after she'd suffered so much to keep and raise him. Cody looked up at the ceiling and pushed her thoughts from this realm into Sraosha's so that her guide could hear her words.
We are never to harm or cause the harming of innocence. My orders contradict each other.
Sraosha's response was cold and brittle.
His life or yours, it's that simple.
Simple?
Please. It was the most complicated thing she'd ever had to contend with. But there was no need to keep postponing the inevitable. No matter what, Adarian had to die. He was too dangerous to live with the powers he'd amassed. No Malachi was ever to have grown this strong. And once he was gone, she'd have to deal with his son.
Nick could never turn into the monster who'd fathered him. She couldn't allow that. Not if she was to save her own family. One way or another, Nick would have to be stopped. And she was the only one who could do it.
Chapter 8. Sitting on a locker room bench, Nick tied his regular shoes and moaned in utter agony. After tackling him with a vicious blow, Mason had discreetly stomped him hard in the ribs, done in retaliation for Stone's detention that had kept him off the field today and out of the upcoming game. And with every minute that passed, it ached more. At its current rate of expansion, he should be fully incapacitated within an hour. Maybe 10 minutes.
You gonna live? Caleb asked as he stopped by Nick's side.
Nick glared at the bulging black backpack on the floor at Caleb's feet that he really didn't want to pick up.
Probably not, Caleb snorted.
Well, if you plan to die, give me a little heads up so I can either save you or go into hiding to save my skin.
Oh, that just warmed the cockles of his heart.
Yeah, roger that.
Nick's phone started ringing again. Sighing, he glanced down to see who it was, as if there was any doubt in his mind.
Casey?
Caleb asked. He cut the sound.
Who else?
Caleb flung his towel over his shoulder and shut his locker door.
Dang, Nick, she's like some crazed celebrity stalker.
Yeah, well, I said I wanted a normal girlfriend who had no real problems.
Be careful what you wish for. You just might get it.
A chill went down his spine. He snapped his head up to meet Caleb's gaze.
What'd you say?
Be careful.
Yeah, no, I heard you. It was just eerie. I've been hearing that a lot lately. Caleb pitched his towel into the laundry basket.
Well, you know what they say. Acriana vertiana.
Nick scowled as he gingerly rubbed his injured side. Yeah, I hear that one all the time. What crack are you on, buddy? Laughing, Caleb picked the backpack up with an ease Nick envied and set it on the bench beside him.
It's my language. It means, when the universe speaks, listen. It's common in demon-kin lore to believe that the gods send us omens and signs all the time. Once you learn to recognize them, it can save your butt a lot of agony.
Do you really believe that?
Honestly? I think they just like screwing with our heads, but there is something to be said for monitoring anything in your world that's redundant.
His phone rang again.
Ah!
Nick silenced it. So she texted him. He actually whimpered. Do all girls do this?
Caleb shrugged. How would I know? I don't hook up with girls.
TMI, Kay? TMI, I don't want to know what, if anything, you hook up with. Laughing again, Caleb pulled his car keys out of his pocket.
You want me to take you to work?
If you don't mind, I definitely don't want to hike with that right now. Nick got up and stared at his evil 500-pound backpack.
Really, Nick?
Caleb's tone was drier than the Sahara.
You want me to carry that, too?
Nick batted his eyelashes at him.
Why, you're such a strong, handsome brute, Caleb Malthus, he said in a thick, over-exaggerated southern drawl. Why, it'd just mean the entire world to me to have my suitor be so thoughtful and kind.
Caleb shoved at him, causing him to groan in pain.
Don't say shit like that out loud. I'll kill you if someone overhears you and thinks you're serious.
He jerked the backpack off the bench, tossed it over his shoulder, and headed for the door.
Caleb, baby, wait, honey, I didn't mean to make you mad.
Nick started after him, then had to stop, as a wave of pain racked him across his ribs. He cursed Mason under his breath.
You better hope I don't ever catch you off campus, dickweed.
Next time he set someone on fire, it could very well be Mason. And it might not be an accident.
Nick, baby, what's wrong?
Nick pulled up short the instant he left the locker room and came face to face with the queen of the multiple and annoying texts.
Hi, Casey.
She arched both brows as she noted his arms across his middle and his slumped stance.
Is something wrong, Shook?
Took a bad hit during practice.
Is that why you've been ignoring me?
Nick cringed as he ran through a list of possible responses that wouldn't cause her to do further harm to his body. The only problem? He couldn't think of a single one that wouldn't get him jack-slapped.
He wasn't ignoring you, Casey,
Caleb said as he backtracked to Nick's side.
It was my fault. I took his phone away. I didn't want him distracted after he'd already been hurt. Sorry.
Score one for the fast-thinking demon friend.
Thank you.
Nick shot over to Caleb's thoughts. Caleb inclined his head to him.
So are you done?
Casey asked Nick.
Not yet. I've still got to go to work.
She flashed a mischievous grin at him.
No, you don't. I already talked to Mr. Hunter, and he agreed that you could use a night off. So it looks like you're mine tonight.
Nick feigned a smile over the sudden lump in his stomach.
Goody.
He glanced past her to Caleb.
Help me.
Caleb gave him a wicked grin.
Not on your life, amigo. Your girl, your problem.
He handed Nick the backpack so hard that it caused Nick to grunt.
You kids have fun,
he said with an evil gleam in his eye.
I'll see you tomorrow. Caleb!
He ignored Nick's desperate call as he headed out of the building.
Coward. I heard that.
Of course he did. And then the rat chose to ignore it.
Fine. I'll remember this, Malthus.
Casey rose up on her tiptoes and kissed him.
Finally. We have some alone time.
Yeah, but I've got a lot of homework.
She nipped his chin.
You'll get it done. You always do. Besides, you're number one in the class ranking. Let a night slide and give Brenna some hope that she might actually snag valedictorian away from you before graduation.
She took his hand and pulled him toward the door.
I have a surprise for you.
That really made the knot in his gut tighten to the point he'd probably pass a diamond later tonight.
I've learned to really hate surprises.
You won't hate this one.
He wasn't so sure about that. Last time he'd heard that, he'd almost been eaten by a demon. Casey pulled him to her car, then put his backpack in her front trunk.
Where are we going?
He asked as they got into the car.
You really don't like surprises, do you?
Not even a little.
Sighing, she started the car and waited until they were on their way before she answered.
Did you hear that Alex Peltier is starting a band?
Yeah, I heard him say something about it. Why?
They're looking for a drummer.
He still wasn't following her train of thought or overly perky attitude about it.
Okay.
She turned her head to pin him with a pointed stare. That didn't help him guess at all. His telepathy only worked with other telepaths, and since Casey was normal, he was clueless.
I'm apparently missing a vital clue. Can I buy a vowel, Pat?
To his utter relief, she turned her head back toward traffic before they crashed and became a hood ornament for a semi.
They're looking for a drummer, Nick.
You're a drummer, right?
Was she insane?
No. No, I'm not.
You played in band, I remember it.
So did he, even though he'd tried his best to forget it.
3 years ago for 6 weeks, and then I had to drop out.
Why?
He clamped his jaw tight before he admitted to her that they hadn't been able to afford drumsticks. How embarrassing was that? Drumsticks were only a couple of bucks. And until Kirian had hired him, they hadn't even had a buck and change left over for him to stay in band. Sadly, the whole reason he'd picked drums was because it was the only instrument he didn't have to buy or rent. He'd used his school books as practice pads, and even that had been more than his mother could afford. But he would never admit that poverty out loud. He had too much pride for that.
I didn't have time for it, he lied.
You still learned how to play.
Not well, he added quickly. You know, there's a really big difference between learning what a note is and being Tommy Lee.
Yeah, but I bet you remember a lot more than you think you do.
He appreciated her confidence in him, but at some point common sense had to make an appearance in this conversation.
No, Casey, I don't. I barely learned anything.
Seriously, Nick? You need to learn to believe in yourself. There's nothing you can't do if you put your mind to it. That's why I'm taking you to the audition.
He glanced at the road and actually considered jumping for it. He'd rather be a stain on the pavement than endure the horrors of what she had planned.
I tell you what I believe. I believe I'm gonna highly embarrass myself, which is something I can do without.
No,
you won't.
He heard the deep aggravation in her tone as she snapped at him. Even though his ribs protested it, he raked his hand through his dark hair.
Why are you doing this to me? What did I do to you to make you hate me like this?
She gave him a peeved glare.
I don't hate you, baby. And I'm not doing anything to you. You said just the other day in class that you loved being a band.
I also said I'd love to be an astronaut. I hope that don't mean you're going to throw me in a rocket and launch my butt in outer space.
Stop being ridiculous.
Nick wanted to beat her. He wasn't being ridiculous. She was, and unreasonable, too.
I really don't need this crap. He really didn't. The day had been bad enough, and after barely escaping death yesterday, twice, he didn't want to go through anything horrible today.
Was it really too much to ask for a 24-hour period of normality? His stomach heaved as a wave of terror consumed him. That feeling didn't get better as they pulled up in front of Maddox St. James's house, and she parked her car on the curb. She turned in the seat to face him.
They're auditioning in Eric's garage. Eric and Alex are the guitarists, or one's a bass or something, I can't remember, but you know Eric, right?
He nodded. Eric was Maddox's older brother. Nick and Bubba had helped to save from zombies last year.
Casey, shh, no argument.
She got out, then literally pulled him from the car and up the driveway with him dragging his feet the whole way. He hadn't been this big a baby since he was 10 years old, and his mother had pulled him into the lacy panty section of Walmart in front of one of his teachers and her daughter, who was in his class, while two of them had been shopping for Tina's training bras. Oh, the humanity and degradation of that nightmare. Nick felt like he was going to hurl. Why couldn't Mason have killed me during practice? As they neared the garage, he heard someone attempting to play a song he couldn't even begin to identify. It reminded him of a 2-year-old with an overturned pan. The poor kid was hitting the drums very deliberately while counting the beat out loud. He'd stomped the bass pedal with his foot, then counted and hit the snare and floor tom. And the serious torture that was going on with the hi-hat and crash cymbals made the hair on the back of his neck rise. Yeah, okay, Nick could probably play better than that. But the kid didn't seem to care as he kept going in an awkward style that froze Nick to the spot as soon as they came into view of the drummer. Nick didn't recognize him from school, but since Eric didn't go to St. Richard's with him, Alex, and Maddog, he could be from Eric's high school instead. To the credit of the band, none of them laughed or jeered at the guy's poor skills. Of course, their expressions basically said they were too horrified or shocked to move, never mind speak. Except for Alex, who had one hand over his mouth while his blue eyes were wide and round as he watched the kid play. Tall and blonde, Alex Peltier was a member of the Bear Clan that owned and ran Sanctuary on Ursulines, where Nick's mom worked. He and Nick had been cursory friends for a couple of years, and in all honesty, he liked the bear. Nick really only knew Eric through Maddog and his ritualistic bitch sessions about how much Maddog hated his older brother and the emo stage that Eric seemed to be locked into. A lot on the odd but extremely brilliant side, Maddog was the certifiable genius who'd created the Zombie Hunter game that had turned half their football team into zombies almost 2 years ago. Luckily, they'd stopped it, but it hadn't been easy. The other two guys, who sat in stunned silence with Eric and Alex, Nick didn't know at all. Screwing up her face, Casey pressed her finger into her left ear and shuddered. Finally, the kid stopped abusing the drums. He got up and made a grandiose, formal bow to Alex and company. "Thank you. Thank you very much," he said, even though no one was applauding. "For the record, I can practice any day but Sunday." He came forward and handed each band member a card. "That's my name and number for your convenience. I know, to be fair, you'll want to hear everyone else audition for the band. Once they're done and you realize how great I am, you can reach me there until 9. I'm not allowed to take calls after 9 or else." He smiled at each of them. "I can't wait to hear from you." Alex's mouth opened and closed several times before he finally spoke. "Thanks." He looked down at the card. "David, we really appreciate you coming by. See you soon." David drew near Nick and raked him with a sneer. "You should go on home. They already have a drummer. Me." "Nice ego there, buddy." But Nick didn't say anything out loud. Who was he to hurt someone else's feelings? Honestly, he envied the kid that kind of confidence. God knew he'd never had a drop of it. "Hey, Nick," Alex said, rising to his feet as he realized they were there. "Casey, what are you doing here?"
"I have no idea," Nick mumbled.
Casey scoffed at him. Then she stepped forward, dragging Nick in her wake.
"He's here to audition."
Alex's eyes widened.
"You play drums?"
"Play the radio, mostly."
"Stop, Nick,"
Casey chided as she pushed him closer to Alex.
"He plays incredibly well. He's just bashful about it."
Still, he kept fighting her.
"Really, don't. I suck. Big time."
He gestured over his shoulder to the tiny chihuahua who wouldn't get her teeth out of his hiney.
"Casey hit her head earlier when they dropped her off the top of their cheerleader pyramid, so I think I'll take her for a CAT scan and—"
"Nick," she snapped, "stop it. Now get over there and play."
Alex bit back a laugh.
"I don't think she's gonna let you escape until you play something."
"Yeah, 'cause I have not been embarrassed to my bones enough times today. Thanks, Case."
Alex gestured to Eric.
"You know Eric already."
Dressed in black on black, Eric had a blonde streak in the middle of his dyed black hair that he wore spiked all over his head. He jerked his chin in greeting.
"What up, Goucher?"
"Not my dignity, that's for dang sure.
Eric,
Next, Alex indicated a guy who looked closer to Eric's age than Nick's.
Our lead singer is Marlon Phelps.
He stood up to shake Nick's hand. With dark skin and black eyes, Marlon was several inches shorter than Nick, and as he drew close, he raked a hungry look over Nick that quickly told him they were on entirely different teams when it came to pursuing prom dates.
Hi, he said in a wispy voice as he extended a hand toward Nick. Please, call me Marla or Marls.
Hi, Marls.
Nick shook his proffered hand. Alex continued his introductions.
And the silent, moody one over there with the sunglasses he won't take off is our bass player, Duff Porticalian.
Duff had short, jet-black hair and an aura around him of a street punk who'd rather rip your head off than shake your hand. But as he gave a nod toward Nick, Nick saw his real form flash through his mind. Like Alex, he might appear to be a guy in his teens, but in reality, he was in his early 30s and a werepanther. One of the most peculiar things about werehunters was that they aged a lot slower than humans. Their adolescence hit them in their late 20s and early 30s, at which point they were put in human schools to help them learn how to interact with non-preternatural beings, something that didn't always work out to everyone's benefit.
Hi, Duff.
Duff ignored him completely. Alex sighed.
You'll have to forgive him, Nick. He has perpetual PMS.
Hey, Casey snapped indignantly. That's a sexist thing to say. Alex laughed.
Not your PMS, his PMS, premeditated mental sickness.
Scowling, she looked back and forth between them.
What's that?
He's pretending to be clinically antisocial, right, Duff?
Duff flipped him off. Ignoring the gesture, Alex turned back to Nick.
Anyway, we've been asking everyone to play Wipeout if they can, or whatever else you might know that's rock.
Okay. Wipeout. How apropos, since that was what he was about to do. Nick looked to Casey, still wanting an out, but she wasn't about to give him one. She appeared even more determined than before.
Thanks, Case.
Nick scratched nervously at the back of his neck.
You wouldn't happen to have an extra set of drumsticks I can borrow, would you?
Duff curled his lips.
He doesn't even have his own stick. Come on, Alex, this is a complete waste of my time.
Oh, shut up, Casey snapped at him. Like you have anything better to do than feel sorry for yourself. She reached down and snatched a set of sticks from the guitar case at Eric's feet. Nick wasn't sure which of them was the most stunned by her actions. He didn't know if he should apologize or run. She pressed the sticks into his hands.
Show them what you can do, baby.
Nick still wanted to vomit, but
what the heck? He'd suffered far worse humiliations in his life than this one. At least she wasn't bra shopping with her mom while his mother oohed and aahed over lacy panties in public while he held her pink purse.
Wanting a giant black hole to suck him out of this, he went to the standard 5-piece red drum kit and took a few minutes to adjust the throne and pieces for his height. He put his foot on the pedal and took inventory of what he was working with. One floor tom, two rack-mounted toms, the snare and bass, hi-hat and cymbals, two crash and one ride.
All right, everything he needed to fully embarrass himself. Cool beans.
This too shall pass.
And unfortunately, he would live through it. With a sigh of dread, Nick closed his eyes so that he wouldn't have to see their horrified faces, and searched his memory for something he could play that wouldn't be too mortifying for any of them. All of a sudden, in the back of his mind, he heard the sound of crashing thunder, then a freaky laugh, and someone saying,
"Wipe out."
The next thing he knew, he was playing the song. No, not playing. He was owning it, without missing a single beat. What the heck? How could he do this? He'd never really played this song before, only heard it a few times on the radio. Yet his body went through the movements and notes as if he played it 1,000 times. Alex came to his feet with a cheerful whoop, then reached for his guitar and joined in with the riff. Yeah, okay, not to sound egotistical, but it was pretty epic. Nick smiled as he tasted real pride for the first time in his life, and when Duff joined in and started jamming with them, he really felt like something other than a stone-cold loser. Even Maddox's little brother Ian came outside to listen to him play, though why Ian was dressed as a box was anyone's guess. But at least the little box liked Nick's music. For that alone, he might be willing to adopt a younger brother the next time Maddox tried to give Ian away. 2 minutes later, Nick finished with a flourish. Ian jumped up and down, cheering along with Casey. At least until he lost one box arm that he had to quickly pick up and attempt to reattach. Nick wasn't sure who was more surprised by his lack of suckage, the guys or him. Duff tucked his pick into the strings on the neck of his bass.
You're good, Gaucher. Real good.
Coming from his surly personality, that had to be a giant compliment.
Thanks, Duff.
Duff inclined his head to him, then set his bass aside.
Well?
Alex asked the group.
You got my vote, Eric said.
Marlin nodded.
Definitely fine by me.
A slow smile broke across his face.
In more ways than one.
Alex beamed.
Then it looks like we have a band. All we need now is a name.
Pokemon Live!
Ian shouted. Eric curled his lips at his brother.
We're not across the river, Ian. Go inside and leave us alone.
Ian glared at him.
I hope Maddox turns you into a zombie again, you freak, and this time the principal eats you.
Eric took a step toward him. Ian let out a yelp and jackrabbited for the house, shedding pieces of his box costume in his wake. With a sound of disgust, Eric shook his head.
I knew I should have traded him for his sister when I was a kid.
Ignoring Eric's family drama, Duff leaned forward on his chair to put his elbows on his knees.
What about Vexed?
Eric shook his head.
We don't want a name people will have to look up to understand.
Vexed?
Asked Duff in a disgusted tone.
Really?
Hey, have you met the average student at our schools?
Eric asked. Duff backed down.
Point well taken. Vexed is up.
Casey exchanged a frown with Nick, who had absolutely no idea what to name the group. Eric tapped his long black nails on the speaker in front of him.
What about Five Angry Guys?
When the others started to agree, Nick spoke up.
No. Never.
Duff frowned.
Why not? I like it.
Yeah, me too, Alex said.
Nick held up his hands.
Fine, but when people shorten it, and they will be known as F-A-G.
Eric, Alex, and Duff were mortified by the acronym.
Marlin laughed. Oh, I like it even more.
The other members exchanged uncomfortable grimaces.
Oh, come on, y'all, Marlin said, still pressing for it. We'll be like Queen with Freddie Mercury.
Nick draped his arm around Marlin's shoulders.
While that will help with your dance card, Marls,
it will leave the four of us relegated to tundra status at school. Please have mercy on us, we beg you.
He sighed wearily.
Fine. But we could change it to Five Angry Men. Of course, I'm not angry, but I'm willing to learn.
Nick laughed as Alex chimed in with approval. Duff nodded.
Five Angry Men it is.
Eric went to clap Duff on the back.
Don't touch me,
he growled, like the panther he was. Eric jumped back. Casey leaned against Nick and smiled at him.
Told you could play the drums.
Something in her tone set his inner warning system off.
How did you know?
She shrugged.
You look like a drummer.
He also looked like an idiot in the tacky shirts his mother insisted he wear, but that was definitely untrue, he hoped. Suddenly suspicious of her, Nick handed the sticks to Alex, who refused to take them back.
Keep them. We're going to be practicing here in Eric's garage 3 nights a week. If you want extra time, you can use Damien's practice kit in the club room at Sanctuary. The Howlers usually practice really late at night or early in the morning, so the kit should be free for your use during after-school hours.
Nick was touched by Alex's generosity. But then that was one thing about the Bears. They were all kind-hearted and had been stone-cold decent to him and his mom.
When's the first practice?
Nick asked. Alex zipped his guitar into a black gig bag.
Day after tomorrow, 4 to 6.
Nick sucked his breath in sharply.
That conflicts with football.
Alex considered it for a minute, then looked over to the others.
Can we do 7 to 9?
Duff shrugged. I don't care.
Fine with my schedule, Marlin said. Eric nodded. Tabby might be a little nuts since it'll cut into her vampire stalking time, but that shouldn't be too big a deal. She prefers I play in a band anyway. Nick had to bite back a laugh about that. He'd met Eric's girlfriend, Tabitha Devereaux, before he'd met Eric. While she was sexy on a level unto herself, she was a bit touched in the head. 7 it is, Alex said, dragging Nick's thoughts back to them. We'll see you then. All right. Casey wrapped herself around him and walked him back toward her car. She beamed at him the whole way. How do you feel, Nick? He hated to admit it, but unbelievably good about myself. Thank you for making me do this. No problem. Sometimes we don't know what our talents are until we try. Maybe. Still, he would never have listed this on his resume. Of course, he was sure it was his powers that gave him this ability, like the answer in chem class. He was growing stronger every day. I'm in a band, he breathed, unable to believe it. He'd always wanted to be in one. The dream had been so strong that he'd never really spoken about it to his mom, mostly because he didn't want to upset her over the fact that they couldn't afford it. Now that they could, he was going to rock the house down and use his powers for something other than evil. Inside Artemis's temple on Mount Olympus, Ambrose stumbled as a fierce pain ripped through his skull. It was a familiar agony he'd learned all too well these last few years. Nick had changed something in their past that had affected their future. Closing his eyes, he tried to see what it was that had altered. But before he could, another wave of misery consumed him, and this one drove him to his knees. What are you doing, Nick? He breathed, trying to push the pain away so that he could focus. It was useless. The agony pulled him under and refused to let him go. Ambrose? He winced at Artemis's voice that resonated inside his aching skull. She knelt beside him, then gasped. Your nose is bleeding. That he already knew, since he could taste it. She cupped his face in her hands. I'm all right, Artie. Artemis shook her head in denial. You don't appear to be all right. You look rather sick and pale. Worse. He was shaking. I need blood. She pulled the curly red hair back from her neck in an open invitation. The sight of her alabaster skin made him salivate. But her blood wasn't what he needed right now. The demon's blood. Color faded from her cheeks. You're almost out. You told me not to let you use it anymore. I have no choice. Something's wrong. He panted as he felt his powers grow even stronger, more fierce. His skin began to turn from tawny to the red and black, swirling skin of the Malachi. Artemis shrank back from him. Ambrose wrestled with the demon that was kicking inside him, demanding release. Growling, he fought for control with everything he had, but it wasn't easy. The beast was so much more than it had been. What have you done, boy? His memories were shifting and rearranging so fast that it left him sick to his stomach. For a moment, he saw his mother on that fateful night when she'd been killed and thought that maybe, just maybe, this time they had saved her. But it was a false hope. Artemis's bow and arrow mark was still on his face, and his mother remained dead. Yet the most frightening realization came a second later. Instead of them pushing the Malachi into eternal submission, Nick had just released him. Ambrose felt his humanity leave as his vision turned from human to the red haze of rage. He no longer cared about anyone or anything. All he could taste was blood. All he could feel was hate. Enough with humanity and their disease. It was time for them to yield their world to their masters. He rose to his feet as his wings unfurled. Artemis screamed. Laughing, he lunged for her. Chapter 9.
Nick barely recognized himself as he stared into the full-length store mirror in front of him. Casey had all but strong-armed him into a frou-frou salon that smelled way too much like perfume to get his hair cut, and then forced him into Saks Fifth Avenue to shop for something less hideous to wear. All his life, he'd walk past the shops at Canal Place and wondered what it'd be like to have enough money to shop here. His first excursion had been a few months ago when he'd bought a shirt for Kieran's birthday. As strange as it sounded, it hadn't occurred to him to buy clothes for himself. Now, he grinned at the sight of the expensive black pants, belt, and black silk shirt he wore. Yeah, this was definitely the life.
I make this look good.
Casey laughed. I love it when you flash those dimples at me. That landed like a punch to his nose. Nick stopped smiling immediately and cleared his throat. She tisked at him. How on earth did I upset you by complimenting you?
I hate my dimples, he said in a low but emphatic tone. They're girly.
She made a loud sound of total disagreement. They are not. They're girl magnets, maybe, but definitely not girly. Why would you think that? He wiped at his cheeks where the dimples were hiding, wishing he could remove them forever. There was a woman in church when I was a kid who always said I smiled so pretty that I should have been born a girl. It wouldn't have been so bad had I not always had a feeling that my mother would have preferred a daughter over me. She appeared aghast at the comment. How can you possibly think that? Nick shrugged as he remembered the unguarded expressions on his mother's face when he caught her wistfully touching tiny ruffled dresses in stores, or the way her longing gaze would follow after little girls with their mothers. But he didn't want to share that with Casey.
I don't know.
Has she ever said that to you? She'd made jokes about it from time to time, and he didn't want to admit it out loud either.
Nah, I guess not.
Casey leaned up against his back and wrapped her arms around his waist. She smiled at him in the mirror.
Trust me, Nick. You look hot in this. Completely edible.
That caused his right eyebrow to shoot up all on its own as heat scorched his cheeks and his thoughts burned with images he was still too young to have in his head. They made him even more uncomfortable than being in an expensive store where he felt like a fraud and kept waiting for the security guard to come throw him out.
So what do you think?
The clerk asked as he joined them.
He'll take it,
Casey said before Nick had a chance to speak. Nick hesitated, knowing his mother would never approve of an all-black outfit. She'd have all manner of fits. But he did like it.
Ooh, Akri, Nick. Looking spiffy like the seamy in your all-black clothes. Except you're a boy and not a seamy, but you know what the seamy means. You finally coming into the demon world in all your finery? Now all we need is to get you some barbecue sauce and big old plate of Cajun boudin rouge, crackling and hog's head cheese. Yum, yum, yum.
Laughing at the unique sing-song accent that was unlike anything else he'd ever heard, Nick turned as Simi came up on his right and paused to look into the mirror over his left shoulder. A little odd. No, take that back. A lot odd. Simi was another good demonic friend of his. Today, her ever-changing black hair had a purple stripe on the left-hand side that matched the short, frilly skirt and Doc Martens she wore. A matching purple corset peeked out from beneath an ornate black lace jacket that reminded him of an anime drawing. She was absolutely breathtaking and always good for a laugh.
Hey, girl, what are you doing here?
With a wide smile, Simi lifted her arms to show him two wrists full of bangles that she jangled.
Buying the Simi some new sparklies. I was feeling kind of low because of that heifer goddess Akri won't let me eat and thought some good eats would cheer me right up, and I know they will.
She snapped her teeth together. Nick still had no idea who the heifer goddess or the Akri was that she spoke about all the time. She acted as if he knew, and if he asked her, she'd say as much, which really didn't help him figure out their identities. Simi pursed her lips.
What are you doing here all alone, by yourself, with no one else?
K- KC wrapped a possessive arm around his waist and tugged him away from Simi's grasp. He's not alone, by far.
Could her tone be any icier?
But Simi was undaunted and uninsulted as she glanced around the store in sharp, short head gestures that reminded him of a bird.
Where's Akra Cody? I know she didn't leave you alone by your lonesome. She know better, 'cause Cajun boy get into all manner of trouble whenever he's left on his own, by himself.
Her words returned the lump of sadness to his stomach. Simi was right. He and Cody had been basically inseparable. Until now.
We broke up.
Simi made a tisking noise that sounded strangely like someone typing on a keyboard.
Now, why you want to go and leave a perfectly good Akra for something else?
She passed a less than complimentary glare over Casey's body.
And here the Simi thought men traded up, not down.
She dropped her voice to a deep baritone,
like way down bottom of the barrels.
Casey came around him with a snarl. Nick caught her and pulled her back. He'd seen Simi in a fight, and Casey was no match for an angry demon with mad Simi skills. And if Simi had her customary barbecue sauce and that coffin-shaped purse she always carried, she'd make really short work of Casey.
Maybe we should talk about this later, Simi?
He asked, pointedly. Simi hissed at Casey like a cat.
We can talk later. But the Simi say you're not gonna listen, 'cause you're hearing something else right now, and it ain't got nothing to do with your boy ears or brains, but rather your boy parts.
She held her hand up imperiously to keep them from interrupting her.
But mark the Simi's words, Mr. Gaucher, some counsel.
Hesitating, she pressed her finger to her lips in thought.
Or is it counsel?
She waved it away with a flounce.
Or, oh, who cares? Some things ain't worth listening to. So don't let them things into your head, Nicky. Where they,
she lowered her voice to where he could barely hear her,
whisper, whisper, whisper.
She straightened up and pinned Casey with a gimlet stare.
Ticked off demons are hard to exercise and get out of your skin. Trust me on that, 'cause the Simi know her demons. And they're demons, too.
With one last nasty hiss at Casey, Simi turned and stalked off. Nick started to go after her, but Casey stopped him.
You need to pay for your clothes, Nick.
Oh, yeah. Dang. Last thing he wanted was to be arrested for shoplifting in Saks. How could he have forgotten so easily? The soft, well-fitting clothes felt very different from his usual hand-me-down wear. Still, he turned his head to look past Casey, trying to see where Simi was going, but it was too late. She'd vanished completely. Dang, that demon could motor. Sighing, he left Casey's side and returned to the dressing room to change into his old clothes. Then he went to the register, where he almost choked at the price of his shirt alone. But the clerk didn't take mercy on him or his wallet as he rang Nick out. The cost of it all made him hyperventilate. Holy cow, and beef jerky. Really? To his credit, he didn't show his mortification, even though he wanted to cradle his wallet to his chest and run to the door before he bought things he really didn't need. It was so hard to act nonchalant over something tantamount to 2 months' rent. Thank goodness his mama wasn't there. She'd beat him for the waist. Good Lord. When did it get so expensive to buy a pair of shoes, socks, one black t-shirt, and 3 outfits? No wonder his mom shopped at Goodwill. Those ugly shirts weren't so ugly after all. Don't think about it, Nick. You make enough money now. And besides, their cost is the least of your current problems. True. He still had Cody out there, wanting him dead. And if you have to die, go out well-dressed. Yeah, right. His happiness completely vaporized by the mere mention of Cody's name. Nick reached for the bags.
Wait.
Casey turned back to the clerk. He wants to wear the last outfit home. Cut the tags for us, please. Nick almost whimpered when the clerk obeyed. There was no way to return them now. Once he walked out, they'd never take the items back.
His stomach shrank at the thought. Even more upset than before, he took his new clothes to the dressing room to swap them out. I am so whipped. He'd stood up to zombies, demons, and a deranged coach out to steal his soul, so why was telling one pretty cheerleader that he didn't want to go broke on a pair of jeans so hard? Because I'm tired of being a loser. Just once in his life, he wanted to look like somebody, feel like somebody. He tucked his tacky Hawaiian monstrosity and threadbare jeans and worn shoes into the bag, then went to meet Casey, who bit her bottom lip when she saw him. Her entire face lit up. Yeah, okay. The price was worth it. At least, that was the thought until another memory cocked him hard. Cody had always looked at him like that, without his having to go broke for it. I like your Hawaiian shirts, Nick. They're your signature. Signature tacky, maybe. But Cody had never once been embarrassed or made uncomfortable by his mother's insistence on his fugly clothes. Unlike Casey. Nick bit his lip as he tried not to go there. Change was good, right? Everyone needed to shake things up, defy the norm, try something new. But if that was true, then why did he feel so bad right now? It was stupid. Yet he couldn't shake the funk that had him in a fierce headlock. While he liked the clothes, he didn't really like the reason he was wearing them. Casey stopped him as they passed by a mirrored column and forced him to look at his reflection. Who is that handsome, refined gentleman? But Nick didn't see himself. Instead, he saw a female clerk behind them who was staring at him with a hunger in her eyes that matched Casey's. More heat exploded over his face. He wasn't used to women paying him much attention, unless they were insulting him or laughing at something stupid he'd done. Without commenting on Casey's question, he started for the doors, but she reached out and stopped him. Not so fast. You need sunglasses to go with your new posh image. I've got a pair already. She rolled her eyes. Not those cheap things you wear. The right pair of sunglasses can make or break the man. He would argue that point, but he had to admit that the ones Kirin and Asheron wore were exceptional, and while he didn't think it would break the man, it did lend an air of coolness to them that he was sadly lacking. So he allowed her to haul him over to the sunglasses counter where designer eyewear was laid out like a bright, shiny banquet Simi would most likely cut a swath through with her barbecue sauce. Yeah, okay, these really were a lot better looking than the scratched-up pair he'd bought in a gas station clearance bin 3 years ago for a buck. Honestly, he'd never known that there were this many kinds or colors. A female clerk beelined for them. Can I help you? Nick had a compunction to look behind him to see if anyone else had walked up. It had taken the other clerk 10 minutes to acknowledge them in the men's department, and even then he'd been reluctant to help until he realized Nick had a platinum credit card and Casey wasn't afraid to use it. Which ones do you like? Casey asked. Nick shrugged. How could one mere mortal, or in his case, semi-immortal man, choose from so many? What do you suggest? The clerk pulled out a pair of yellowish Oakleys. These are really popular. A lot of guys go for these. Yowza, Nick had to bite back profanity at the price tag. But he was sure he'd gone bug-eyed when he glanced at it. Were they out of their ever-loving minds? Who paid that for something you were going to drop in the driveway and possibly back over? Or worse, sit on them and crush them or leave them in a restaurant somewhere? Grimacing, he shook his head and moved away from her. Do you have Predator sunglasses? He had no idea what they cost, but that was what Asheron wore, and Ash, in all his goth glory, didn't strike him as someone who would give over a body part for fashion. Of course. When the clerk started to hand them to Nick, Casey intervened and pulled the tag off before he had a chance to see it. Casey set them in his hand. They'll be my present to you if you like them. Nick hesitated. I don't know about that, Case. Shh. She put her fingers over his lips, causing his body to erupt again. Dang, he should have bought a longer jacket. Don't think, Nick. Just try them on. It was definitely hard to think straight when she looked at him like a Victoria's Secret model. His throat dry, Nick did.
and froze as he saw himself in the mirror on the counter. With his new haircut and the stylish glasses and clothes, he looked grown. There in the mirror, he didn't see the scared kid who normally stared out at him, afraid he was going to accidentally cut his throat while he shaved and bleed out before his mom came to find his body. He looked like a man, confident, sophisticated, rich. Was that really him? He turned his head to verify it. Yeah, it was definitely his reflection, but it didn't look like him. Casey arched an expectant brow. Well, I like them, he said, before he could stop himself. She smiled and dug out her own pink Visa card. We'll take them. She handed the card to the clerk. Still, Nick hesitated. It was one thing to have her buy him a Coke, another to take something that could very well be $100 or more. Casey, I really can't. Yes, you can, she said, cutting him off. Just say thank you. He wanted to argue, he really did, but she had that unique girl expression that said, boy, don't you dare argue with me or you will regret it. His mom and Cody had tutored him well on what happened to any male dumb enough to try their luck when that look was present. Submit. Taking a deep breath, he inclined his head to her. Thank you. She kissed him. You're very welcome. They really do look good on you, the clerk said as she handed Casey the receipt to sign. You wear them like they were custom made for you. And that caused him to be even more uncomfortable. People, stop complimenting me. He really didn't like it. Thanks. Casey handed the signed receipt back while the clerk gave them the case and bag for the sunglasses. Nick couldn't explain it, but he did feel different, much more confident. Was this what Kirian, Caleb, and Asheron felt like all the time? It was kind of cool not to be self-conscious, to have clothes you knew didn't come from a thrift store sale rack. Lifting his chin with a newfound pride, he followed Casey out of the store. Casey watched Nick very carefully as they headed to the lot where she'd parked her car. While he'd been cute in his regular clothes, in his new ones, he was absolutely stunning. She'd had no idea when she started this little confidence-building game what the Malachi really looked like. Dang. Full-grown, Nick would be stellar. In fact, it was taking everything she had not to take a bite out of him now. But he was still very skittish. Every time she reached toward him, he jumped as if she were a high-voltage wire about to wrap around him and zap him hard. While it had been cute in the beginning, it was starting to wear on her nerves. She had to get him to relax if she was to open the channel for his powers. Are you hungry? She asked as they put his new clothes in her trunk. I'm always hungry. That had been true of her brother at Nick's age, too. She'd never seen anyone pack away more food than Zavid. She ran through her mind the restaurants that were nearby that would appeal to a teenage Malachi. Hard Rock? She saw the hesitation in his eyes before he mumbled, sure. What was that? Would you rather eat somewhere else? Nah, Hard Rock's fine. He frowned as she moved to unlock the doors to her car. We're driving? Of course. He actually scowled at her. Why, it's just on the other side of the Westin. It's what, half a mile, if even? We're just going to move from this parking lot over, too? It'd take us longer to navigate traffic than hoof it. Was he serious? Zerelda didn't walk. She'd never been a pedestrian. Come on, he said, flashing those adorable dimples at her. We can walk along the river. It'll be fun and scenic. That is why you have a convertible, right? To embrace nature and the fresh air? No, but she couldn't tell him the real reason. It made jumping out for human victims a lot easier. Biting her lip, she glanced up at the evening sky. It's getting dark. He scoffed at her argument. It's early still, and there's plenty of lighting along the way. He winked at her. Come on, Casey. I'll be your protector. If he only knew the truth, he was the one who needed a protector. From her. Humans definitely weren't her predator. They were her food. All right.
She locked, then closed the door and walked around to his side of the car. He held his elbow out to her so that she could take it. Zerelda almost declined, but Casey wouldn't do that. She'd be flattered and thrilled to walk arm in arm with a boy this fine. And in truth, so was she. It'd been a long time since anyone made her feel like this, like she was desirable and normal. She hated him for that. Worse, he placed his hand over hers and walked as if she really meant something to him. That alone made her want to claw out his eyes and eat them for hors d'oeuvres, because she knew it was a lie. If he had any inkling as to who and what she really was, he'd be fighting her or trying to kill her, just like all demons did. She'd already been lied to and betrayed once, and her brother was paying the price for it. Trust no one. Everything betrays. And the Malachi in particular was one nasty, treacherous beast. Unaware of her hatred, Nick took her to the backside of the parking deck that looked out onto a large cement wall that blocked them from the huge bank of Transformers. Casey cut an unamused smirk at him.
Nice wall, Nick. Love the danger high voltage signs.
He laughed. Only the best for you, baby. Only the best for you. Still smiling, he led her across the parking lot toward the streetcar tracks. And the closer they got to them, the more tense he became. Did he sense something she didn't? Were they about to be attacked by an unseen threat? She glanced about nervously, well aware of the fact that even a half-formed Malachi had a much more heightened alarm system than she did.
You all right?
Yeah. He loosened his hold on her, as if he would need to start running any second. Pavlovian response to how many times in the past I've had to run to catch a streetcar. She snorted until she realized he wasn't joking.
How much have you had to do that?
Let me put it to you this way. He checked his watch. The next car that's heading to the French Market station from here will arrive in just under 6 minutes.
Oh my God. You have the whole line schedule memorized? Are you serious?
It's heart failure. Before we moved, I used to catch a French Market stop to Dumaine every morning for school. She wrinkled her nose as she remembered those days.
No wonder you were always dripping sweat when you got there. Why didn't you ride a bus?
He shrugged. Bus would have taken longer and it wouldn't get me any closer than Ursulines or the square. The streetcar was quicker and more direct. That only confused her more.
But the market to Dumaine is even shorter than our little jaunt here. Wouldn't it have been easier and closer to get off at Ursulines on either the bus or streetcar?
Yeah, but after I ran to catch the streetcar at the market, I needed that extra stop to catch my breath. And with morning traffic, the streetcar was still quicker and much more reliable.
That confession stunned her. Why would anyone put themselves through that kind of misery just to get to a school where he was a pariah? You really aren't joking?
No, I'm not. Nor was he complaining. That was the hardest part to believe. He never did, for that matter. He merely accepted people and things as they were. How refreshing. And stupid. Arm in arm, they walked up the stairs behind the Bienville station to the brick walkway that ran mostly parallel to the Mississippi River. The water glistened from the setting sun and provided a nice tranquility to the cool evening. Off in the background was the picturesque suspension bridge that connected the city to Algiers Point. Nick was right. It was very pretty, and at this time of day, semi-private. There was almost no one over here with them, only a few stragglers or hobos off in the distance. For the first time since Grimm had assigned her duty here in New Orleans, she saw the city as something other than a nuisance, and Nick as something other than a target.
Okay, I'm glad you talked me into this. I do like it.
He flashed those dimples.
I told you.
Slowing down, she laughed as they neared the beautiful Monument to the Immigrant, where a muse of hope looked out over the river, while protecting a Victorian family of four that bravely faced the city with nothing more than the clothes on their backs. She didn't know why, but the carved little girl and boy reminded her of her and her brother. Unwilling to remember those days, she slid a teasing glance to Nick.
Yeah, yeah, you're the man. What can I say?
Before Nick could answer, a shadow stood up from where he'd been crouching on the hidden benches in front of the monument and pointed a gun at them.
You can say nothing, bitch, if you want to stay alive.
Another armed man stepped out from the tree on the left and pinned Casey and Nick between them. Sucking her breath in sharply, she froze. While she was an immortal creature, the body she was in wasn't. One shot into Casey's flesh, and she could be trapped between worlds forever. Chapter 10.
What were the odds of this?
Nick ground his teeth until he tasted blood as he recognized the guys holding guns on them. Alan and Tyree.
Oh yeah, this was karma of epic proportions. He owed both of them a payback large enough to get the country completely out of debt. They were the whole reason he now worked for Kirian Hunter.
Back in the day when he'd stupidly called them friends, Alan had duped him into almost mugging two tourists. What kind of friend would do that to another, right?
Hey, let's all go to prison together, shall we? Forget college, Nick, and a future with a beautiful wife and kids. Angola prison and baggy orange jumpsuits are so much better for you and your ego, too. We'll all get big, hairy boyfriends and never be eligible for a decent job again. Come on, let's go. Booyah.
When Nick had refused to jeopardize what little future he had to go along with Alan's brilliant scheme, they'd turned on him with relish and had almost killed him. But for Kirian intervening at the very last second, they would have. And they'd have done it with a gleam in their eyes that he had yet to forget. His childhood friends, who had claimed to be his brothers from another mother, had relished beating him into the ground. Now, as he stared at them in their natural gangsta habitat, he wondered how he'd ever seen them as anything other than the selfish animals they were. How had he ever called them friends and not seen the cruelty they were capable of? Yet back then, that cruelty had never been directed at him. Only other people Tyree and Alan had judged deserving of their hatred. At the end of the day, Nick hadn't wanted to judge them for things they couldn't help, the way the rest of the world had wrongly judged him. But sometimes, just sometimes, those judgments were warranted and necessary survival skills. And instead of summarily saying they were wronged by circumstances beyond their control, Nick should have looked closer at them and seen what part of their situation was exactly their fault and no one else's. Right or wrong, everyone made their own decisions and should be held accountable for them. Trying not to be obvious, Nick scanned the shadows for the missing member of their merry criminal band. But for once, he was nowhere to be seen.
"Where's Mike?"
Nick asked, putting Casey behind him as he calmly faced them. This kind of cowardly scum didn't frighten him at all. They just pissed him off.
"Did he finally wise up and move on? Or is he lying in a gator's belly down in the bayou because he caught a clue and told you where to stick it?"
Alan gaped as he recognized Nick's voice.
"Goche? Nah, dog, that ain't you. That can't be you."
Tyree curled his lip as he ran his covetous gaze over Nick's new clothes.
"Nah, it don't look like Goche at all. He's not wearing them gag ugly shirts."
"Goche,"
Nick said from between his clenched teeth, correcting their mispronunciation of his last name, something they knew he couldn't stand. Alan sneered at him.
"Who you roll to get them threads, boy? I know you can't afford them with what your whore of a mama makes taking off her clothes for pocket change, and that old lady you work for sure ain't paying that kind of money for you to take out her trash at night."
Tyree laughed.
"If she is, I think we ought to pay her a visit one night after she closes her shop."
Casey started crying hysterically.
"What's going on, Nick? Who are these people?"
He spoke to her over his shoulder.
"It's all right. Stay calm."
Alan let out a low whistle.
"That's your woman? Damn."
He tilted his head to see her better.
"Nah, can't be. She too fine for a piece of ignorant Cajun gutter trash like you. Now be good boy and pass her purse and your wallet over to us, and we might let you live through the night."
A slow smile spread across Nick's face as he broke into a thick Cajun accent, something that should have warned them how hot his temper was right now and the fact that they ought to be running away as fast as they could. The more Cajun he sounded, the more lethal his action.
"A présent, cher. We'll say we pass a bon temps instead, n'est-ce pas?"
Alan cocked the .38 he held sideways and aimed it at Nick's chest. How many times I got to shoot till you learn better than to mess with me, boy? Payback's a B. And she was about to come over with friends to collect rent with interest. Nick held his hands up and splayed his fingers to lure them into thinking he was passive. Yeah, right. Nick O'Shea, passive. They really were too stupid to live. Ça c'est bon, Capon. Ain't no need in getting hostile, mon rien. Nick moved slowly while Casey's wails picked up tempo. He held one hand out to her. Let me have your purse, babe. Tears streamed down her cheeks, streaking her makeup as she obeyed without question. Something Cody would have never done. Heck, Cody would have already yanked out a sword and cut one of their heads off. But Casey was not Cody. She was meek and helpless. Nick wrapped his hand in the strap of her purse while he fished his wallet out of his back pocket. Then he whispered to Casey, "When I move toward them, I want you to drop to the ground, okay? And stay there until I tell you to get up." Louder, for the benefit of their muggers, he said, "Just do what they say, boo. It'll be all right." Her hands visibly shaking, she nodded. Tyree licked his lips as he skimmed Casey's body with interest. "I think we ought to keep his girl and have some fun with her before we let her go. What do you think, Alan?" Alan grinned. "Yeah, I think we might do that." "Like heck you will." Nick held the purse out to Alan, making sure to keep it just a hair past his reach. "I think that would be a very unhealthy thing for you to do, Chew," Nick said, his voice dropping an octave as his hands began to heat up. "Kind of like smoking 2 packs a day, only much more lethal and quicker to kill you."
"You don't scare me, dog, and you damn sure don't tell me what to do."
Alan snatched at the purse, thinking Nick would loosen his grip and let him have it. Instead, Nick jerked it forward, bringing Alan into his range. Before Alan could catch his